Chapter 36, Tahiti. Oceana dipped a clean cloth into a pitcher of cold water and laid it gently on Thomas's shattered, swollen nose. It had been 2 days since Varua's attack, and the skin under the colonel's eyes was turning bluish-purple and black. She knew the discoloration would get much worse before it began to improve. He hadn't left the comfortable woven chair on the porch of the Aubert's cabin, except to go to the privy, since they returned from Papara. The physical pain was receding, and in a moment of honest reflection that morning, he realized that the combination of frustration and melancholy that he was feeling was the real cause of his misery, not his fractured nose. It rained hard the previous night, unusual for July. Now, as the late afternoon sun began its drift towards the horizon, it was hot and sticky, and there was no breeze off the ocean. Boswell was excited about the weather because it meant he would be able to net even more butterflies for his growing collection. Each day at dusk, he returned to the cabin with a bag containing jars in which he stored his day's catch, and today he had been excited to share a brand new species of Lepidoptera. "Ocario ocrisia, I shall name him," said Boswell, as he held up the clear jar for Thomas's inspection. "It means the black hair streak. Do you know that this makes the 10th new butterfly that I have discovered? I am convinced that there are hundreds of species present on these islands. A man could spend his life catching and cataloguing them." It was painful to talk, but Thomas couldn't resist. "And is fame and fortune awaiting that man, Timothy?" Boswell grunted and snatched the jar away. "Science is an end and reward unto itself, my dear Colonel. Sufficient, it is to say, that 2 centuries from now, lepidopterists will still be reading about my work, and your legacy will be?
Hundreds of great-great-grandchildren spread around every corner of the earth, if the lad doesn't change his mating habits," chuckled Oceana as she walked behind Thomas and tousled his hair. She retrieved a jug of wine and poured a glass for the three of them, and then another one for Aubert, who was walking up the beach with his easel and the day's painting. Emile's return marked the end of the workday. Oceana laid out a tray of cheese, bread, and fruit to go with their wine, and her husband stirred the coals under the iron grate in the cook shack to grill a mahi-mahi that 2 fishermen had brought them earlier in the day. He seasoned the fillets with salt and pepper and cooked them over hot coals for 5 minutes on each side before drizzling them with lemon juice and serving the fish with hot bread.
"Can you taste?" Aubert asked Thomas as he handed him a plate.
"Taste, yes. Smell, no," Thomas replied. The light flaky white meat was naturally sweet, and his only regret was that there was no white wine to accompany the tuna. "A sacrilege," Mr. Kwan would say.
Dusk came on, and a cool breeze picked up off the water. Boswell made coffee, and Oceana picked up her violin and began to play a lovely piece by Bach. Aubert lit a fresh cigar and splashed brandy into everyone's coffee. Thomas was drifting off when he heard Boswell ask, "Is that a sail?" He looked out to sea and made out a swatch of sun-washed canvas bobbing in the light chop outside the entrance to their cove. Oceana set down her instrument and went into the cabin to fetch the Dolland 4-draw bronze telescope from the bureau. She raised the glass, adjusted the sight, and then whispered,
"Dear God, it's Keani!"
Thomas bolted up from his chair, which set his nose bleeding again. Aubert nudged him back.
"We will take care of this, Thomas," he said.
Thomas watched his friends go down to the water's edge and help Keani pull the canoe up off the beach. Then they hauled 3 canvas bags from the little boat and came up on the porch. Thomas was astonished, excited, and embarrassed. Whatever the purpose of her visit,
He was ashamed to be seen by her in this condition, a disheveled, unwashed, raccoon-eyed invalid. Keanu felt differently. She dropped to her knees in front of Thomas's chair and took his hands in hers. Her face was aglow, and his discomfort melted away in the warmth of her smile. She lifted the damp cloth he had been using and dabbed at the blood seeping from his nose. Then she turned to Oceana and made a series of hand signs.
"I am not completely fluent in sign language," Oceana said, "but I believe she is telling us that she has left her brother and Papara forever."
She pointed.
"Everything she owns in the world is in those bags."
Aubert folded his arms across his chest. "Thomas," he said in a soft voice, "do you understand what this means?"
"Yes, I do."
"And is that what you truly want?" Oceana added. "There can be no turning back. If Keanu stays here, she is your responsibility. Not just for a night, Thomas. Those days would have to be over. She would be with you forever."
"You mean she would be my wife?" Thomas replied in a thoughtful voice.
Aubert, Oceana, and Boswell nodded as one. Thomas stretched out one arm and folded Keanu against his side.
"Yes," he said. "That is what I want."
Keanu and Oceana disappeared into the house a few minutes later. Aubert filled three glasses with brandy and pulled a chair over beside Thomas.
"Varua will not allow this situation to stand, Thomas, nor will La'ata. You have done much more than defeat their champion. Now you have defiled their customs. A price must be paid."
"You and Keanu cannot remain here, that is for certain," Boswell said. "As soon as you are able to travel, you will have to seek another refuge."
Thomas sat up. He felt strangely energized and filled with new purpose. "I can travel right now," he replied. "It is just a matter of where and when."
"As to that matter, I have some thoughts," said Aubert.
"Varua will look for Keanu and Papaete first, since they have family there. The idea that she would go immediately to you would simply be unbearable for him to contemplate. And so, I believe that we have at least 3 days to prepare before Varua's warriors come here."
"Warriors," Thomas repeated in a quiet voice.
"Oh, yes," Aubert replied.
"Les chemins de guerre."
"Sorry, what was that?" asked Boswell.
"The hounds of war," Thomas said somberly. "There really was no turning back."
"And where do you think they should go?" asked Boswell.
Aubert looked out to the sea and turned his gaze to the northeast, where the sky was pitch black and clouds hid the waning moon and evening stars.
"I must speak to Oceana before I commit to any plan," he said. "Tomorrow we will decide."
He turned and went into the house. Boswell searched Thomas's face and slowly shook his head from side to side before finishing his brandy and joining the others inside. Lamplight from the cabin spilled down the beach, almost to the water's edge. Thomas could hear waves rolling onto the black sand, the rustling of tree branches swaying in the breeze, and the gentle rush of water flowing over rocks in the stream where it spilled into the cove. Married. To a woman he barely knew, and with whom he would never have a normal conversation. A woman he had only briefly kissed and never shared a bed. He touched his throbbing nose. The bleeding had stopped, but it was still swollen and painfully tender. It had been 7 years since Robert E. Lee surrendered to General Grant at Appomattox Courthouse and ended the Civil War. When Thomas swung up on Cornwall for the long ride home from the military hospital a few weeks later, he believed that his fighting days were over. Now he stood at the railing of Aubert's porch and looked out to the wine-dark sea, deep and black, foreboding and unforgiving, and realized his hope was a fool's dream. "Walk out with me toward the unknown region," the poet Walt Whitman had read to him as he tended to Thomas's wounds at Mount Pleasant Hospital, "where neither ground is for feet, nor any path to follow,
No map there, no guide, no voice sounding, nor touch of human hand.
Whitman was describing the inevitability of war and death. That was a poor choice of memories to reignite on the very night Keaani had come to him, he mused. And yet, war and death continued to haunt his every step, and nothing he did had been able to turn them back. He turned to join the others, anxious to shake off his fatigue and despair. Through the window pane, he saw Keaani, laughing at some remark Aubert had just made. What manner of man could carry such heaviness in his heart in her presence, he thought. Then she saw him through the glass and invited him in with her eyes.